Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Inside China Tech. I'm Zhen Su, a tech reporter with the South China Morning Post. So, we hear a lot of artificial intelligence stories coming out of China, but here's a story that I'm sure you've never heard before. Today, we have with us Meng Jing, who is a Beijing-based tech reporter with us, and she covered the AlphaGo Go matches about 2 years ago. And today, she is trying to use that same artificial intelligence technology to put her young baby son to bed. For all of you people out there, you need to know Meng Jing is a new mom. She gave birth to a very adorable baby boy in July, and today we're going to talk about her experience in trying to use artificial intelligence, well, artificial intelligence powered apps to put her baby to sleep, because, you know, babies sometimes don't get a lot of sleep at night. They wake up, they fuss. Meng Jing, how about you tell us how your life has changed since having a baby? How much sleep are you getting now on average?
My life has changed completely after, you know, I have this really, really adorable kid. Especially, I only got maybe on average 5 to 6 hours of sleep a night. But the difficult part is I don't usually, because I need to feed my son every 3 hours during night. So it's really horrible. After maybe you can put him to bed after feeding him, but it's difficult for me to go back to sleep. So it's just on and off, and it's really difficult for me. Especially last night, I think it's if our boss can hear this part, it would be great. I only slept for 4 hours because I had a phone interview to an expert in the U.S. at about 2 a.m. So after that, I feed my son, and then it's become extremely difficult for me to go back to sleep. So I think I slept maybe at 4, but I fed my son again at 5 a.m. So it's just really difficult for me.
So it just sounds like you're basically taking a series of short naps. That's basically what you're doing. Like, you take a nap and then, like, in an hour you have to wake up, you have to feed him. So what drove you to start trying out using apps to improve this sort of situation? Like, what do these apps do? You know, what drove you to use these apps? How did you hear about them?
Yes, definitely. That's the reason, because I read from some book. The book told me that babies at my son's age is like 4 months. They can sleep through the whole night, but my boy couldn't do that. And so I think there must be something wrong with my boy, or something wrong with my parenting skill, you know. So I really read a lot. I search online and I go to forums, and it's just nothing seemed to work. So I search online and I found there's many of these apps use artificial intelligence technology. Basically, they learn of your kid's sleeping patterns, and then they can offer you individual personalized advice to help your kids sleep better. So I think that's definitely my hope to get better sleep. So I tried an app called Nod. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this app.
Is this a US or Chinese app?
It's a US app. And so all the languages are in English. But that's not a problem for me. The thing is, because I have already, you know, returned to work from about 1 month ago, so I cannot really record my son's sleeping patterns during daytime. So my mother helped me to do that.
Wait, sorry, can I just clarify? So this app, you use it, and then the idea is that you have to put in the data for it to give you better recommendations, right? So you have to put in, like, when your son's sleeping, you know, like, for how long he's sleeping, stuff like that. What kind of data does it collect?
Yes, actually a lot of data, but mostly about is a data about my son's sleeping patterns. Like, I need to log in when he start to sleep and when he's awake, and during night how many times he wake up. So and also for them to give you better recommendation, it's also important to put in the data regarding your child's feeding activities, like how frequently do you feed him or her, and how much milk does the baby consume, and also it's ask a really, really detailed questions, like was you bottle feeding or breastfeeding, and is it left breast or right breast, and for how long. So it's really a lot of work for me to use the app.
How much data do you have to put in before it gives you, like, a recommendation? Like, is it instant? Do you do it over a few days and then they give you a solution? Like, how does it work? Like, how does it actually improve? Is supposed to improve your life?
I think for the first, I didn't really receive any recommendation in the first maybe 5 to 6 days. So maybe after a week, I get my first recommendation, and the app told me to reduce the nighttime feedings for my boy. You know, it's more of a hope than a solution to me, because I always want to reduce the nighttime feedings for my son. I just, you know, I don't know how, because he cries and he wake up. And if you just, you know, suddenly reduce the nighttime feeding, he didn't go back to sleep. So, which means you can't have to hold him for the entire night, and you couldn't, you know, get any sleep at all. So it's just, I don't think it's really a solution.
No, so I'm actually quite curious, because obviously this app is getting, like, information or data from moms like you, like new moms like you, and, you know, other moms around the world, whether you're in China, in the US. And then all of this data is self-reported, right? So you report, like, oh, if I reduced the nighttime feeding, for example, whether or not his sleep has increased and stuff like that. But how do they actually determine that it is, like, how do they make these recommendations? Like, do they put in their own research beforehand, or do you know?
I think they work with a lot of experts in this field. So basically, they have some kind of algorithm, and when you need to do this, you can need to have a lot of data for starters. So they must have a lot of data, and they somehow build an algorithm with people who have expertise in this. So that's why when they analyze your data, and they can somehow give you a personalized recommendation. And in the US, I think I searched online, and they said for a doctor or an expert who has expertise in baby sleep, they often usually charge $300 an hour. So, you know, for this app, it only cost me 35 yuan a month. So it's quite cheap compared with if I really hiring a doctor for this kind of job. But it's just really doesn't help me the way that I hoped.
So do you still have a subscription to this app?
Yes, because I subscribe for a month, so I haven't really used it for a month. So I think after a month, I may just switch back to the free version. So I just log on the data to use as a kind of like a fancy e-notebook to write down all my son's sleeping patterns, but I don't think I'll pay them again for the, you know, the artificial intelligence advice.
Cool. But also, Mengjing, you know, I'm aware that you cover artificial intelligence, you know, as your beat as a tech reporter in the SCMP. And I also am also aware that you basically covered, you know, AlphaGo, I think about 2 years ago when they had that kind of like technology where they basically pitted AlphaGo, which is this artificial intelligence machine, against like this Chinese Go master, right? And then the and so it's not every new mom who has watched AlphaGo. So, you know, now that you think back, did you ever think that this technology that allowed a machine to beat a human at this really complicated game could ever help you to put your son to bed?
I think so. You know, I chose this app and to use it is because I somehow had this kind of hope that they can basically offer a cure for me. But it's just my experience show that it's maybe the technology is not as advanced as I expected, because you know the game Go, it's a super complex game, and you know, somehow AlphaGo managed to beat Ke Jie, the Go master. So I think it's if they can beat, they can basically win a human being, a human master in this kind of game, they can definitely help me in a sleeping issue. But but it's not that, but it doesn't, it didn't really work that way. So I'm now really, you know, I write a lot of stories about how artificial intelligence is going to, you know, beat human in this job and that job. And I always think they may replace me as a reporter in maybe just 10 years. So maybe in the future, I can be some kind of human editor, you know, working with a lot of robot reporters, and maybe I can produce 100 stories a day, but it's just maybe it's in my dream. So it doesn't really work that the way that I expected.
Mm-hmm. But so you know, with this artificial intelligence app, you know, they claim that there's a lot of machine learning or artificial intelligence behind it. Mm-hmm. But so in theory, it sounds great, right? What was the problem with the app for you? Like personally, what was the most, you know, like difficult part of it?
Yes. The most difficult part is absolutely is about, you know, putting in all those data. You see, I think maybe in AlphaGo, because they of course they have a really great research team on that, and I don't think they need to personally generate those data and you know, enter those data one by one into a machine. But within this app, I have to do it. My son is basically, he generates all those data, and I have to be the, you know, to do that, the labor intensive work to put in all those data. It's just a really a lot of work, because his sleep basically is not like sleep, it's just naps. So he naps like 40 minutes, and then he wakes up, and then he naps for another 40 minutes. It's just so much data. So I have to do it all the time. And I think one time I had a cold, so for 2 days I don't really have the strength to handle all those data. And then it's just become so much work for me to enter like 3 days data in one time. So it just really took you a lot of time. And you need to make sure the accuracy of your data. So if you somehow make a mistake in entering all those data, so the recommendation can be wrong for you. Mm. So it's just it's not that easy.
So it seems that that's super ironic, because the promise of these AI apps is that they can offer you recommendations, you can put in the data, and then they will come up with these magical sort of solutions or suggestions for you that will make your life easier. But it seems like your life is actually made much harder because you have to then track all of this. Am I right?
Yes, that's right. Especially, you know, during the night, I somehow need to light up my son in a really dark room and putting out those datas. And then, you know, after the work of putting those datas, it's just really difficult to go back to sleep again. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's really interesting because I think you were aware that there were three different sort of sleeping apps, but then you chose to use this one, which is Nod. Am I right? These are all US apps.
Yes.
Yeah. So I like personally, when I sort of look on the US app scene, there are a lot of these kind of apps that claim to be artificially intelligent where they require you to put in the data. So, you know, apart from these baby sleep tracking apps, there are also apps that claim, you know, to be able to track, like for women, their menstrual cycles. Like, oh, you know, you put in your different, which day you got your menstrual cycle, and like you can include all of these data about like how you're feeling that day. You know, are you feeling energized? Are you grumpy? Like, are you in any pain? Where's the pain from? And you're supposed to put in all of this, and it can give you recommendations like when you're going to be PMSing, when your next period is going to be. And so I also use one of these apps just to, you know, keep track, because for women, you know, you kind of want to know when it's coming, right? But it's such a pain because I'm putting in all of these data and then I never find that it's ever accurate. Like, it's never here on the day that it says that it's coming. And then after some time, you just give up because you're like, why am I doing all of this if it's not even accurate? And also, sorry, I'm just going on this long rant now, but also, it seems to me that this is a very US-specific sort of thing, because I don't know, I don't see any, or I don't hear that of that many similar Chinese apps on the market where they require users to put in this much data, right? Is there, you know, why do you think there isn't like this sort of trend?
I think for me, in my observation, it's just there are a lot of AI-enabled apps in China that basically push you news and the products you may want to buy online based on your previous, you know, online search record. But it's just maybe it's because they don't think Chinese can be encouraged to do this kind of data thing. It's just a lot of work, and also usually this kind of app requires you to somehow to basically they are paid apps, and maybe it's in China it's just most Chinese internet users are not so comfortable to pay for this kind of thing. So maybe the market's not ready.
And also, I guess, so like you mentioned, these Chinese apps, like I think Jinri Toutiao, that's the news app we're talking about, right? They're supposedly using AI to sort of aggregate news. They push you news that you've read, that they think you're interested in based on AI. And like for e-commerce, I think the very famous one for AI is Taobao, which is owned by Alibaba, which, by the way, owns the South China Morning Post, usual disclaimer. So they basically operate, like their data input is from the user's sort of behavior patterns. And then they sort of use that to sort of predict and see what you want to do. So I just think it's fairly interesting, this kind of split in terms of how AI is used to power apps, you know, for certain consumer apps and like in the US and China. But also, you know, if we sort of take a step back and broaden out this topic for AI, apart from apps and, you know, consumer facing, how it's going to improve our lives, how else has China in particular started using AI? You know, from your coverage, where do you see really interesting uses of AI in, you know, our everyday lives?
In everyday life, that must be facial recognition technology. So it's, you know, we have this kind of all kinds of surveillance cameras in China, and the Chinese government is really pushing this technology forward. And like in banks in China, if I want to open an account in a bank, and usually if you just you can do it with your ID card, and if you just show up at the bank and carry your own ID card, it's okay. But now, because of this, you know, the popularity of facial recognition technology, they don't allow you to do that anymore. So they have this kind of like fancy machine in bank, and you need to put in your ID card, and the machine need to swipe your face to identify you are the same person, you know, as a ID card. So if you pass that, then you can move on to do all the other stuff you want to do at the bank. But if you fail to do that, then you need to try again and again. For me, it's especially difficult because on my ID card, I don't wear a pair of glasses. So I often need to swipe my face like 3 to 4 times, before I can successfully identify myself to the bank. So yeah, it's not really very convenient.
Yeah, so they're basically using that as a form of verification that you are, yes, who you are before you can do all these bank services. Mm. But
yes.
So apart from, like, you know, when you mentioned this facial recognition technology, I think in recent months, there has been a lot of attention on the kind of like facial recognition technology, how China's using it to sort of track its people. And I think in China now, you can even get like a jaywalk. Like if you jaywalk, you can get a ticket with facial recognition, right? Wasn't there a really funny story the other day that we wrote about
Dong Mingzhu?
Yes, yes. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, it's really funny because the machine, I don't really remember in which province they think the facial recognition technology powered the camera. They think they caught Dong Mingzhu, the air conditioner queen in China. But it turned out they made a mistake. It's not Dong Mingzhu herself. It's basically her image on the side of a moving bus. So the machine actually caught the Dong Mingzhu's face, basically an advertisement on a moving bus, but they think they caught Dong Mingzhu herself, which is so wrong.
So that means this sort of facial recognition isn't actually, like, it's not the same kind of systems that are being rolled out nationwide, right? Different provinces maybe use different companies and they have a database. And this Dong Mingzhu story, okay, so like Jing said earlier, Dong Mingzhu, she's the chairwoman of China's biggest maker of air conditioners, and that company is called Gree Electric Appliances. And this particular incident happened in the city of Ningbo, where they basically, that like a bus had a picture, and then the facial recognition system sort of like caught her jaywalking. But so I think the problem with that is that facial recognition technology probably didn't include like heat maps, or the heat maps, like where they can determine whether that's actually a live person. And so they sort of used that, they sort of caught that that incident. Mm. And there was a little bit of an embarrassment. But that also means that facial recognition technology right now, it's not really uniformly across China. Like they haven't, like different cities still use different facial recognition?
Yes, I think it's not a kind of a top-down thing to basically let the country somehow use one kind of technology from a certain company. You know, there are so many Chinese companies, they are competing in facial recognition, in voice recognition. So they all roll out their own products, their own services. So they try to work with local governments in China to push the adoption of the technology. So that's a thing.
Apart from things like facial recognition, like what are some of the sort of big applications that artificial intelligence can do, you know, to improve our lives in the future?
I think in all kinds of industries, artificial intelligence can definitely improve the efficiency. They can analyze a lot of data and help make predictions. And I think in one supermarket I interviewed before, they can use artificial intelligence to help the store manager to decide maybe in a rainy day what kind of products will be the best selling products in the particular, you know, location, you know, of a supermarket. So it's really can help a store manager reduce the waste of food and increase the revenue of the supermarket. China is also moving very rapidly in autonomous driving, and so like Baidu and Tencent, they all big Chinese internet companies. They all spend a lot of money to work on driverless technology. And in Xiong'an, a small city, basically Xi Jinping's dream city, which is located not very far from Beijing, the government is working with Baidu to test autonomous driving and in the city. So I think in the future, if the car can really connect it with each other and drive themselves, it can definitely improve the traffic. But we also need to understand there's a lot of risks if there's, you know, hackers hacking into the system, and if there's actually a small, a teeny mistake in the system, it's basically life-threatening for us.
Okay, so let me sort of bring it back to the start. So I think AlphaGo was really the sort of machine that brought artificial intelligence to everybody, you know, to the forefront of the mainstream consciousness. And one very interesting thing that happened when AlphaGo was playing one of its games against humans was that I think in the game against Lee Sedol, who is one of the world's best Go players, at one point in the game, AlphaGo made a move in the game that no human player would logically make. And subsequently, the human player, or Lee Sedol, basically also made a move that confused the machine, basically. But the reason that he made that move was because, you know, obviously he was watching the machine play, and it forces him to think out of the box, right? So I guess in a way, we can also see that artificial intelligence is sort of pushing the boundaries on how we think about things, or how such sort of the way we've been sort of doing things or processing certain information. But the problem with that, I guess, you know, when we're talking about something like Go, or when we're talking about something like Baby App, on the consumer front, it's still very open-ended, right? There's still a lot of different data points. Like Go, at the end of the day, you put in a lot of like fixed data, you know, you have information of how people played games before, you can feed it with lots of data. But for something like on a consumer facing side, like the baby apps, these are, we're dealing with living beings, right? And every sort of baby is different, and, you know, they fuss differently, they have different sleeping patterns, they have different eating patterns. So yeah, I guess at the end of the day, the consumer level sort of AI tech is really not there yet. And so, you know, on that note, Jing, do you think you will still be relying on these so-called artificially intelligent apps to improve your life?
I don't think I'll be completely relying on this kind of apps, because, you know, so far my experience hasn't really suggest that it's a right way for me to raise my kid, but it does offer some kind of suggestions and And also, I forgot to say that the because they also pushed me some kind of reading materials, like knowledges, how to put your son to bed based on your my son's progress in sleep. So I think that's something I can still count on them to do, but rely on them to completely help me raise my kids. It's something I won't do that. It's basically it's kind of like a machine intervention into your way of raising up a child. That's maybe it's a really dangerous thing or risky thing to do that.
So at the end of the day, it's still more reliable maybe to sort of take advice from like the collective wisdom of like women, like yeah. your mom or like your aunts or you know, all of these people, and sort of use that in you know, until AI is actually to a point where they can accurately make decisions, I guess. Maybe that's the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. I think we have reached the end of today's podcast. So if you enjoy listening to our podcasts, you should definitely go back to the last couple of episodes we did. We did one last week on the plunge of Bitcoin prices, and we've also done one, you know, where we interviewed Jane Wong, who reverse engineers apps and on Singles Day. So definitely go have a listen. Go find our excellent tech content on scnp.com/tech. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, my handle is at Zensu, and Meng Jing's Twitter handle is. this is a recurring theme. It's really funny because obviously Twitter is not popular in China because it is banned. No, it's fine. I haven't on Meng. Okay, so we have found Meng Jing's handle. Her handle is at Meng Jing 8. So it is at MENGJING 8. So yeah, definitely follow us on Twitter. And we'll see you next week. We'll see you next week. All right. Bye, everybody.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.